What is the name of Shauna Mulwey Tweep's memoir that is based on her blog? Answer at the end of the episode.
I would like to go on record, speaking as a citizen of Pawnee.
I'm Kurt Hapley, and I just realized I'm not holding my microphone.
And I will call my new Italian fast casual eatery the Local Calzone Zone.
And you can trust me, because I don't care enough about you to lie.
Everything I do is the attitude of an award winner, because I've won an award.
I made my money the old-fashioned way. I got run over by a Lexus.
Well, hello there, and welcome to Citizens of Pawnee, a Parks and Recreation podcast where I discuss anything and everything from character breakdowns to episode rewatches, as well as some other trivia and tidbits about the show. My name is Brian, and I'll be your host. This is episode number 110, being recorded Sunday, March 10th, 2024, and today I'm going to be talking about Season 4, Episode 8, Smallest Park. If you'd like to contact the show, you can email citizensofpawnee@gmail.com. You can also follow and message the show on Instagram at Citizens of Pawnee Podcast, as well as my other page at Parks Rec Memes. Just a reminder, this podcast will have full spoilers for the entire series. Oh, let me tell you, folks, I did something crazy yesterday. I did something I kind of told myself I would never do before, but it was always just like more like, oh my God, I'm never doing that. Not like I'm never going to do that because I'll die if I do it. So I tried on Crocs for the first time yesterday, folks. Folks, how many times am I going to call you that today? But we went out as a family because the girls needed new shoes. And we were like, you know what? Let's go spend tons of money that we don't have and let's get the girls' shoes. So we went to Famous Footwear, and I've never tried Crocs on before. My daughters each have like three or four pairs. We've never bought them any. I've talked about it. Maybe I've talked about it on the show. I'm not sure. My mother-in-law, my dear mother-in-law, I love her to death. She's got an addiction to Crocs that's gotten out of control. She's got like, she has over 20 pairs. That's no joke. Sadie told me recently what the number was. It might've been like 26 or something. Maybe I'm off it. Maybe it was 16, but I think it's over 20. She has like a separate shoe rack, like just for her Crocs. It's insane. And the funniest thing about them is the movie Idiocracy, which was made by Mike Judge in like 2005, something like that. I don't know. But it's just about like a dumbed down America, like 500 years from now. And in that movie, everyone wears Crocs because this was like before Crocs got big. And Mike Judge was like, I want these people to look as like odd and stupid as possible. And this was like when Crocs were being developed, I guess. And he like found out about this, or maybe they reached out, but he's like, yeah, he's like, we'll use those. And they never changed the design since then. So they still look, I don't know. However, I will say, man, if you can swap out comfort for, I don't know, beauty, look, I don't know, whatever. They were pretty comfortable, which is weird because like they have like, it's not like a soft feeling on your foot, but it's just like, I don't know, the way it's designed. Like I walked around a little bit and it's like, okay, I can understand why people like these. That said, I will never buy a pair of Crocs. If someone wants to buy me a pair, I'll wear them in the safety of my home when no one's watching. But speaking of saving money on your kids' gym shoes, I think I figured out a way, folks. This is crazy. This is going to blow your minds. I figured out a way for all of us to save money, or at least to make money. And that is by shortchanging people. All right. So check this out. Yesterday, Joni needed $12 for some reason. She had like loose money, you know, like loose bills and stuff. So I was like, all right, let me go see what I have. She needed small bills, or she needed like, I don't know, she needed to make exactly $12. So I went down, I checked my wallet, and I had $16. I had a 10, a 5, and a 1. So I came up, and I'm like, well, I don't have 12, but I have a 10, I have a 5, and I have a 1. And then I went on to annoyingly proceed the different ways that this could somehow make $12 based on... I'm like, well, with the 10, if you have two singles, you get the 12 there. And I can just see, like, in her head, she's just getting annoyed and just pulls a 20 out of her wallet and just goes, here, you know what? Take a 20 for your troubles. And then just grabs the 16 from me. And it's just like, All right, well, I just made $4 there. Now, granted, Joni and I, we share accounts for pretty much all of ours. So it doesn't really matter where the money is. It's still like our money. But it was just like, I love that her way to get me to just shut up and stop talking. And like, because she was probably trying to think like, all right, what else do I need here? I know this sounds way more complicated than it was. But either way, what I'm trying to tell you folks is, and now I was trying to think of scenarios where this would be like prime, like great idea, like the Super Bowl. Now we just had it, so you're gonna have to wait a little bit. But or like the, like let's say wrestling events, you know, things like that, those happen 4 times a year, NASCAR, whatever. So go to like a party, you know, like let's just go back to the Super Bowl, because Super Bowl parties are the most common. You go to a Super Bowl party, make sure that you have like $95 in small tens, fives, singles, maybe a couple 20s, because odds are there's going to be that one person, that one idiot that showed up with $100 bill and was like, fuck, man, I don't want to spend all this, but I need change. Well, guess what? With your $94, I nearly guarantee you, you will get that extra $6, because that person will probably hand you the $100 bill after you're like, yeah, I got change. And you pull it out and you spend all that time counting, only for them to see that you're like, you're a couple bucks short. And they're just like, you know what? Fuck it. I don't care. Take this $100 bill. Just pay me back the $4. No one ever remembers about that $4. So I think it's a great idea. Just, you know, we're all out here trying to make money. You know how much groceries are these days. So folks, let me know how much money you make by shortchanging people. Speaking of spending money on things I don't need, I bought a Spider-Punk poster the other day. Spider-Punk. If you haven't seen the Spider-Man Into the Multiverse or Across the Spider-Verse, whichever one the second one is, you probably don't know who Spider-Punk is. I only do because I watch a lot of YouTube videos, you know, about Marvel and whatnot. Spider-Punk is just like a badass looking Spider-Man who's like has like a ripped leather, you know, a sleeveless leather jacket. And he's got like a spiked mohawk, plays guitar and everything. Just a badass looking character. I saw this poster for $3 at my work. They had a Comic-Con there. Yes, Comic-Con. Speaking of that real quick, one of the other staff members, they're like, oh, what are you guys setting up for? I'm like, oh, we got Comic-Con tonight. She's like, oh, cool. What's that? And I'm like, oh, Comic-Con, you know, where all the celebrities go. And I'm like, and I purposely like looked to someone else so it would seem like more just, you know, like whatever, like in passing. And I was like, yeah, you know, it's fucking crazy. I heard Hugh Jackman might even be here. Just like, just to say it, like just to get a laugh out of people. And I just hear like, are you serious? And I just turn, it's like, no, I'm not serious. Fucking Hugh Jackman's not gonna come to our work today for our Comic-Con. So people, I love people. But anyway, brought the Spider-Punk poster home. I was excited. I showed Joni just so I could show her like the sweet value I got for only $3. And wouldn't you know, her response, where are you gonna put that? I don't know. I mean, like, maybe I'll just put it like here on the wall. And she's like, oh, you're not going to try to sell it? It's like, oh, God. Happy birthday to Al from Melmac. He turns 58, I think it is. I'm just kidding. I don't know. He's a little bit older than me. Sorry to show your age, Elf. But anyway, happy birthday. Your birthday is this week, in case you forget, which you probably will. Don't worry. I'll text you to let you know. And then also, I just want to thank anyone who has donated to St. Baldrick's. I'm not trying to put anyone on the spot here. I'm just saying like a few of you have that listened to this show, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate that. I'm going to leave the link in the show notes for the next couple weeks, just in case. You know, again, I'm sorry. I hate to ask people for anything financially after this whole intro has just been about how much spending money sucks. But yeah, if you got a couple bucks to spare, again, I'm going to be shaving my head in support of St. Baldrick's organization, which specializes in cancer for children. So if you are interested, again, that money is not going to me. It's going to the organization, but it's just your way of saying, hey, thanks for, I don't know, shaving your head or whatever. So, all right. Oh, actually, yeah. Well, one last thing. This is just kind of funny. I noticed in this commercial the other night when I was watching Malcolm in the Middle. Progressive, if any of you have seen the new, well, Progressive is kind of like Geico. They've always got like two or three different ad campaigns going at the same time. But the one with the pigeons, it's like an animated, they look more like clay, well, clay pigeons, I guess. Haha, I just thought of that right now. But they're like claymation looking pigeons. And one of them is Retta, Donna Meagle. And then the other one is H. John Benjamin, who I don't know, I can't remember what his character's name is, but he's in the episode from season one. Is it season one? Or season two, I think it is. When Andy is living in the pit and they dump the dirt on him and he gets like the, or he's about to get the lawsuit. H. John Benjamin, he also voices Archer and he voices the video store guy who works with Chris on Family Guy. But anyway, yeah, he was the public defender, I guess. I don't know. He was like the attorney working for Pawnee. Every time Leslie would say something, he would stop her and be like, don't say that. Don't say that. You know, it gives liability. But anyway, yeah, Parks and Rec, man. They're taking over the commercials because you also got, Rob Lowe in the Adkins commercials. And what the fuck, dude? Like, seriously, Rob Lowe literally at this age now, what are we? We're like 10, almost 10 years removed from the end of this show. And he looks better now in those Adkins commercials than he does as Chris Traeger, where we're at now in season four. And this, so on top of like when the show ended, add another four or five to that because we're still years back. So like it's unbelievable, that guy's genetics. But all right, so speaking of like TV and shit, let's get into some filler real quick.
Everything he's saying is nonsense and he's fooling them.
All right, Dune. Dune 1 and 2, I watched both of them. This and I am talking about the new series of Dune, the ones that the first one came out in 2020, I think. I think that was like a COVID movie. It was they did the theater and it was also on HBO Max. I just watched that one recently because I heard great things, admittedly. I heard great things about the second one, and I was like, screw it. You know what? I didn't have any interest in watching these movies, but I keep hearing. However, I still can't bring myself to watch the second Avatar movie, and I love the first one. I just don't care. I've watched some YouTube clips just to see some like the amazing visuals, and they're there, but it's just like, again, I just don't care. I don't know. I'll get to it. I will, because I've heard that's great too. But anyway, Dune 1 and 2, these movies are fantastic. I mean, as far as like the visuals go, the first movie has a lot of exposition and can be very boring at times. Like it took that one took me like a good like almost hour to get engaged. But the second half of the movie really picked up and like the action was there and I loved it. So I more so want to talk about the second one because that's the new one that just came out. I am not going to spoil Dune 2 for you. However, I'm going to spoil. All right. So I'm not going to spoil the plot for you. I'm not going to spoil like any of the like what happens at the end. The only thing I'm going to semi spoil is just some of the stuff about the worms. And this is more so this again, this does not spoil anything. I believe you see this at the end of the first movie, so maybe it's not a spoiler at all, but that is when the humans ride the worms. So if you're like me, if you don't know anything about Dune, I mean, if you're interested, watch the movies. However, the first movie was like maybe like 2 hours, 20 minutes, 2:15, something like that. Maybe a little bit longer. I don't recall. The second movie, though, the one that's still in theaters that just came out, that one's 2 hours and 45 minutes. So these movies, and that's like without credits. So, or maybe it's with credits. Either way, it's give or take 5 minutes. I don't know. So in the second movie, these the worms, they're called the Shai-Hulud. Which actually, I don't know if that's the name of like the one of the master or like this mythical one worm, or if that's just what all the worms are called, the Shai-Hulud. Also, Shai-Hulud is a hardcore band. Chad, who's the guitar player from Newfound Glory, you guys all know Newfound Glory, right? He used to sing for this band, Shai-Hulud. They're pretty dope. You should check them out. But anyway, the worms in this movie. So the worms live underneath this, the sand in the dunes, and they're just, it's kind of like The Walking Dead, like with these worms. There's whatever other issues you have going on, you still have to worry about these fucking worms underground that just come up and swallow you. Like in The Walking Dead, that's pretty much how the zombies are. The zombies aren't like the main threat anymore, like the humans are. So the snakes, or the worms, you find out at the end of the first movie, here comes the spoiler, just in case you haven't seen these. But again, this is not spoiling the plot or anything. It's just like a cool scene. Yeah, you find out that the people can ride the worms, like essentially just hop on their backs and like use grappling hooks with like probably 10-foot ropes on each side. And they literally, they just hold on to it standing up. And that's like a huge, like kind of a rite of passage for the people of this, the Fremen tribe. These are the people who like live in the desert. They're kind of like the rebels in Star Wars, like the Rebel Alliance, because they're like, of course, like the bad people in this movie look down on them like they're shit, like they're scum. They call them rats all the time. But these are just people who are like exiled and they're trying to live, of course, and they've gotten very good at the things they do, like riding worms. So back to this riding worms thing. If you've seen this movie, maybe you could reach out to me, or maybe if you're familiar with the lore of Dune, how do you get off these things? We see in the second movie, Timothy Chalamet's character, Paul, he's going up for like his first time, you know, because he's like this, the prophet. He's like done so much studying on these people. So he knows how their life is, and he knows how to ride these worms, or at least theoretically, he knows like how it's done. So he goes up and it's like, it looks like a failed attempt, but it ends up working. But anyway, so one person has to like basically run on top of a huge sand dune. When the worm plows through, you have to almost just kind of ride the sand as it's caving in, and you just kind of fall onto the worm's back. And then, I mean, like, but these things are so big that like the surface area for this thing's back when you're standing on it, you've probably got a good 15 to 20 feet on each side of you. So you've got a good chance of staying on, like you can grab onto a scale or something. But anyway, so you're riding these things. Now, when you're riding the worms, obviously the worms are above ground. They're not like, their whole body is not slithering on top of the ground, but it's like half under, half on top. Reminds me a lot of Tremors, actually, just how those things plow through. But when you're riding these worms, it never shows anyone get off the worm. It never shows them dismount, because these worms live underground. So when someone is riding them, I assume the worm is not doing this for that person, you know, like just like, hey, the human's got to ride. It's just like, damn it, they fucking got on me again. They're like parasites. But the worm eventually will go back underground. And that's what I wonder is like, when does the human know that it's time to fucking bail? Like, what time to jump off? Because I assume this thing doesn't just stop and it's like, oh, you've reached your destination, and then you just climb off. So I wonder about that, because they never show anyone dismount after riding one of the worms. And then the second thing, again, this has to do with the worms as well. They show you like one or two times in the second movie that these Fremen people travel on, like, now I just said obviously that they ride the worms. However, they don't just do it like one person at a time. Now, you have to know how to ride the worms, and not all of them do that, or at least control the worms. But they show a scene where like the entire village, or not the entire village, but there's like five worms going together. So however many people there are in this tribe, they're spread out all sitting on top of these worms. So you're like, wait a minute. It took one person like almost dying to get onto this thing. And it's not like he literally had to fall onto it as it was just passing by, and then climb up and get on it and take control of this thing. How are entire ass fucking families getting on this thing? So that, it makes no sense to me. Like, it's a cool scene when it's, because of course it doesn't show that. It doesn't show everyone else getting on. It's just like a montage that goes along with fantastic music, by the way. The score and the music for these movies are incredible. But yeah, it doesn't make any sense to me how all of these people, and then that, and also the fact that they have to get off too. It's like, how do you get 30 to 40 people off of one of these giant worms before it just goes, darts back underground, essentially just like killing everyone on impact when they hit the sand, probably going that fast? So that's really the only gripes I had about the movie. I mean, it's like I said, the CGI and the visuals are incredible. The sound design is so good and it's so engaging. Like, I really loved it. I when I first finished Dune 2, like I did think it was too long, and there are some boring parts, but overall there's a pretty good villain who comes in. He doesn't come in right away. He's called like Roth, Feta Roth, I think it is, or Fade Rotha, something like that. But he's played by Austin Butler, and pretty terrifying looking character. Actually kind of looks like one of the engineers or the architects or whatever they are from Prometheus. So it's just like very pale skinned and like has no hair. And you always notice that whenever you need someone to be like hairless, how they always have those dense looking foreheads, like very thick. And it's just because they need prosthetics to cover up the eyebrows. So that's essentially why everyone's eyebrows are so thick above them. So I'm not going to spoil too much of Dune. And then the last thing I wanted to talk about, actually, this was just something folks, if you ever come across a movie called Lavalantula, you got to watch that shit. I was watching it the other day. I got home from work, so I didn't see the whole thing. I just like plopped down and turned the TV on. And this movie's like, so it's about a bunch of tarantulas who just like are spawned from a volcano, you know, because why not? And it's in the same world as the Sharknado verse. And you know this because Ian Ziering, who played Steve Sanders on 90210, he is in the Sharknado franchise, and he actually shows up in this movie, Lavalantula. And I didn't see this part because, like, when I was, I caught like the last 45 minutes, but that was good enough for me to tell you folks to watch the entire movie numerous times. But I guess he talks about it. He's like, oh, I'm dealing with a shark problem right now. And then he's also wearing a t-shirt that has some relation to that movie. But the greatest thing about this movie is that it has like four characters from Police Academy. I couldn't spot the fourth one, but it's got Mahoney, who was in the first four movies, Steve Guttenberg, and then Michael Winslow, who is Motormouth Jones, and then Leslie Easterbrook, I think is her last name. She plays Sergeant Callahan. She's the one with, excuse my brash description here, but she's got the really big boobs, and the guy Takashi is like obsessed with her. So but she's obviously she's a badass. But the three of them are in this movie, and I after looking on IMDb found out that Steve Guttenberg was originally asked to be in the Sharknado series, and he turned it down because he was like, no, this looks idiotic. And then he saw the success it had and was just like, crap, like I really regret that. So then when I don't know if someone reached out to him about this franchise, and he was like, yes, absolutely, I'll do it. There are two of them, by the way. I didn't see the second one. But part of him signing on was that he was going to be able to bring pretty much whoever he wanted as his cast. And I guess Michael Winslow and Leslie Easterbrook, again, I think that's her name, are still good friends of his. So that's awesome they brought him on. There's a couple Police Academy references, actually. Like, someone says something about the Blue Oyster, which is the popular gay bar that is in, not, it's not in every movie, because I think in like the fifth one they're in Miami Beach, so I don't think it's in that one, maybe in the very beginning, but no. But anyway, yeah, it's just that the Blue Oyster is just this gay bar that always pops up out of nowhere. Like, it's just it's so funny. And there's a great song, the so funny. Yeah, check out Police Academy Blue Oyster on YouTube, and that will be a lot funnier too. But anyway, check out Dune 1, check out Dune 2, and definitely check out Lavalantula. Let's hear a quick promo, and then we'll talk about Parks and Rec.
I'm Imran.
And I'm Sophia.
I'm the brother.
And I'm the sister. And we are watching a show about cousins.
We're your hosts for Dance of Joy, a Perfect Strangers rewatch podcast.
We grew up watching the 80s hit sitcom, and now we'd like you to join us every week as we rediscover our love for our favorite TV cousins, Balky and Larry.
You can find our show at danceofjoypod.com and on all major podcast platforms. Now we are so happy, Sophia. We do the Dance of Joy.
Imran, this is a podcast. They can't see us.
Oh, popo.
All right, welcome back. Season 4, Episode 8, Smallest Park, written by Nicole Holofcener, written by Chelsea Peretti. Cold open. We open up with Chris asking Tom if he'll redesign the new Parks logo. Of course, the logo now is the actual font and logo for the show. So just like look at whatever you're streaming this on, the Parks and Rec logo there, or, you know, if you have the DVD or just on the show, the way that it's written out there, that's the way that the Parks and Recreation department in the show, that's like their logo, I guess, which seems weird that every department has different logos. I don't understand that. But anyway, he then tells Jerry that he will be Tom's number two. However, Tom knocks him down to three, even though it's just the two of them. Chris then tells Tom, he's like, hey, man, he's like, you can actually learn something from Jerry. He's been here for a very long time. And then, of course, Tom just starts like laughing his ass off and then pans over and you see that Donna's there, too. She starts laughing her ass off. And then it goes back to Chris, who's kind of confused and looks around and then realizes what's going on. And he just starts laughing his ass off. So it's a really like it's mean, obviously, just because this they're all laughing their asses off just because Chris suggested that it's like Jerry might have some info that Tom could use. So it's just really funny. And I always love it when a scene ends abruptly, like in the middle of something like this one, how they're all just laughing hysterically. And it's like in the middle of a laugh and then it just like cuts away. So, all right. We're in the parks department where Leslie's showing off her new park idea to Chris and Ben. The park is insanely small though, coming in at, and this is no joke, Leslie actually says this, 0.000003 square miles. In fact, it's going to be on a piece of concrete that's about, it's like, I don't think she actually says the dimensions on there, but I mean, like, if you look at it, I'm just kind of eyeballing. I'm thinking this thing can't be any bigger than like 12 by 12, maybe. So like 10 by 10, I don't know. It's basically, it used to just house the last two payphones in Pawnee. She's calling it the smallest park in Indiana, and it'll be a tourist attraction. So Ben tells us that the park is so small, and this is actually after Chris is just like, so like, do we need to do anything for this? Ben says that the park is so small that they don't even need to do an environmental impact report, and that it's a win-win in because it'll basically cost nothing to maintain and it will benefit the community just because, you know, they're getting rid of two ugly payphones and like just a kind of plot of busted up concrete, and they're going to put a nice patch of grass there. So again, win-win. We cut over to Andy and April, where Andy's going through a college course catalog trying to find a course, obviously. His goal is to simply better himself because he's never gone to college and just wants to take a class. So Ron chimes in, telling Andy that he should expand his horizons and try something new. But of course, April shoots that down, telling Andy to just succeed at something he's already good at, making it, you know, kind of pointless, but obviously he'll pass the course. In a talking head, Ron says that he values a good education and would rather Andy take a relevant course. Also, he says Andy is one of the only co-workers he doesn't actively root against. Like, all right, so this is a funny line. I think it's hilarious, but I do kind of call bullshit here because, like, Ron always puts on this tough exterior, but he always helps out his friends, you know? I mean, there's besides a couple times where he's being petty, like, just to be petty, like, with Leslie, mostly. Maybe even Tom a couple times, like where, like last episode when he was kind of fucking with him in the whole hiring process, like he was just kind of making Tom sweat it out, like while he was interviewing all these idiots. But yeah, like I just, whether it's advice or actually even like knocking someone out, like Jeremy Jam for Leslie, I just find like that statement for Ron, you know, like I actively root against all my coworkers. I don't believe that. So over to Ben's office, Leslie starts listing off things for the park. But Ben stops her and says that after this park is wrapped up, he's going to focus on other departments, meaning he won't be doing as much work with the parks department. Leslie's obviously upset, but Ben tells her it bums him out too much being only friends with her. But as usual, she pushes that aside and tells him he needs to do the exact opposite. So like, yeah, Ben tells her, well, what I just said, obviously, he's just like, no, this is too rough being friends. No, we need to do the exact opposite of that. And you can, I love that you can see Ben's frustration because he's just making faces like, what the fuck? Like, I'm telling you how I feel. And you're just literally like just pushing my feelings off to the side. So it's like, you could, like I said, I mean, like he's just pissed off and he tells her finally flat out. He's just like, when this park's done, I'm done working with you. Like essentially he's like, I'm just going to ask Chris if I can be moved to a different department and I'm going to have Chris be in charge of the parks and rec stuff. So, So then I love Petty Leslie. You know, we see it all the time, but just here she walks on. She's like, fine, whatever, Ben. And she just grabs all of like his pens and pencils out of his pencil cup thing on his desk, you know, and just walks out. Just he's like, those are my pencils, all pathetically. And he's like, All right, back over to the Parks Department. Jerry has a poster board display with 27 different Parks and Recreation fonts. Naturally, Jerry's first suggestion is, all right, so I'll give you guys a second. Think of the dumbest font, the one that everyone in the world hates and that whenever someone uses it, it's like, oh, why'd you use that one? Yep, Comic Sans. So, of course, that's the one that Jerry picks. And he's like, you know what? Comic Sans is an easy one because everyone likes it. It's like, I don't know, maybe that was the case back then. But I feel like now whenever Comic Sans is used, everyone's like, really? Yeah, no. But anyway, Tom tells Jerry, though, that the only good font is the Sopranos font where the R is a pistol. If you're unfamiliar, Google the Sopranos logo and you'll see what I mean. Actually, no, later on in the episode, Tom shows us the Parks and Rec logo in the fashion of the Sopranos one. So just finish watching this episode, I guess. But then Tom starts Tomming, like he always does, going way off course, talking about how the department needs a complete makeover, new uniforms, new signage, and a new color scheme. Jerry suggests that they just do what Chris asked and they work on the font. All right, so now we're over at the local community college where Andy's first class is an easy one, intro to guitar. But even Andy can't play, So really quick, actually, I should say, I guess, and I don't know if this is true, like with colleges, you can just kind of walk in apparently and check out the course and just like enter and exit whenever you feel like and have guests with you, because that's what's happening in this episode. There's some funny stuff here, there's some good stuff here, but it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I'm not saying that this can't happen, like maybe with like a kid and his parent, but like April, Andy, and Ron, all three of them just walking around kind of getting into and leaving classes whenever they feel like it, just doesn't seem, I mean, it's funny in the episode, but it just doesn't seem to make any sense to me. So anyway, yeah, like I said, Andy's first class he tries is intro to guitar, but even he can't play dumb in that class because he's already like a very talented guitar player. And he starts kind of like answering questions right off the bat. And the teacher's like, wow, it seems to me like you should be running the course. And he's like, oh, yeah. So April like kind of has to whisper at him to dumb it down. And then when he finds out that they're going to be working on basic chords for like the first month or whatever, he's just like, ah, screw this. So the three of them leave. And then there's a great line by Ron as they're walking out as he tells the instructor, a blonde woman, for what it's worth, I think you'd be an incredible brunette, Ron Swanson. And then he just walks out. Her face is just priceless because like this woman already looks like it. She's like, yep, I will sleep with you right now. I mean, like just the face she makes, she's just like smitten by what Ron just said. It's awesome. All right. Over to the courtyard in the Parks Department. Leslie complains to Anne about Ben. Anne tries to tell Leslie that maybe it's time to move on, but of course Leslie thinks she should just drag out the Parks project for as long as possible. She figures if she can get the citizens involved, they'll figure out a way to stop this park, or at least slow down production. I love that that's Leslie's go-to when she just needs something to like, yeah, I need a deterrent. Oh, I'll just get the citizens of Pawnee behind my back. I love that I can't say the name of my own show, the citizens of Pawnee. But yeah, all right. Later on, so I love public forums so much. Leslie and Ben present the new park to the citizens of Pawnee. Of course, since Leslie needs this meeting to be chaotic, it's actually running pretty smoothly. Except for when an old racist lady says that she doesn't want a basketball court because it attracts a certain type of people. She's cut off before she can finish, thank God. Back over to Andy's course search. He's now checking out a class called Introduction to Lasers, which he also walks out on when he realizes there's no lasers in this class. So again, this is just weird, like with April, and April and Ron aren't being disruptive. Andy's really the only one that's being disruptive, because like in this class here, he's like, sir, where are the lasers? And, you know, and the teacher tells him, he's like, well, we're not using lasers. This is just like the intro to finding out like what they are and all this stuff. So again, the three of them just walk out, which again is a disruption, because it was the first time when Andy left the guitar one. But again, I mean, I'm not saying it's like, this sucks. It's still funny, but it just like, to me, it doesn't make sense that like a college would allow maybe one person. But again, I guess I just talked about that. So Over to Tom, Jerry, and now Donna, who has decided to throw in her opinions on the new Parks Department logo. So this is another one of these, like, all right, and it seemingly always happens with Tom. Where the fuck did all this stuff come from? Like, in this episode, there's a lot of that with Tom. You even saw it with Jerry. I didn't really make a deal out of it, but before, when he had the poster board with all the fonts on there, it's like, who made that and when? And, like, how much time has passed? Because this is the same day. I know later on we find out that Leslie, there is a store in Pawnee called Scientology. Love that fucking name. But Leslie does a ton of business there, but I mean, I guess Tom does too or whatever, because it seems like this thing was made. I guess he could have had someone in City Hall. Maybe they had a department that could have printed that thing out, but it is big. But anyway, Tom has like a stack of poster board size, professionally made, different fonts made out, like one of them being the Parks or the Sopranos logo, like I told you before. But these are all like super nice, like glossy finish, and it's like, when, how, and when, and like, where did the resources come to have these made? It doesn't make any sense. I'm sorry to always bitch about that, to like try to like bring logic in. It's a TV show, and I get it, but it's like, when you've watched it enough times, and then you finally start breaking the episodes down as I'm doing, it's kind of like, All right, so back to the town forum. Things are, they're still not going how Leslie planned, as the citizens of Pawnee are like I said, they're acting kind of normal. There's no craziness. And not even Mel, the red-faced man, who's always up in arms about something, which is great because Leslie's like, come on, you know? And she's like, you're always up in arms about something. He's like, no, I'm not. I'm not always up in arms about something. But that's about as, like, crazy as he gets. As Leslie's like, yeah, that's it. That's it, Mel. Come on, I want this. And then Ben just, like, he realizes what's going on, and he stands up, and he's like, okay, thanks. He just calls it. It's so great because, like, nothing is happening here. You know, these people are just kind of like, all right, yeah, we're good, fine. So he gets up, grabs his stuff, and leaves. And then Leslie tells us in a talking head, which is really funny, she can't believe it, saying that one time a public forum about a new bike rack took 7 hours. So that's great. And this one wrapped up in, like, 45 minutes. Back over to the college. Andy's done taking April and Ron's advice, so he picks at random, and he lands on, and this is literally, he opens the thing. You know, like when people spin a globe around and then they just point their finger down? Andy opens up the courses, like the huge pamphlet thing, and he just like spins his hand around, literally, like, you know, just do a couple circles and then just like lands on one. And it is Intro to Women's Studies. How fitting for Andy, you know? Immediately, though, all three of them love the class because it's a cool jump cut, because it's like when Andy's like, I'll be taking, and then his finger hits the book, and then it just smash cuts to the whiteboard that just says Intro to Women's Studies. And the professor's talking about Joan of Arc, and Ron, April, and Andy are all just like so like engaged, and they're just like, this class is amazing. So they all love it. And Ron even has like a crush on the professor, who, you know what? I didn't even, next episode, I will say her name. I totally screwed that up. I usually write these down because she will be back a few times, and I just totally forgot. All right, so now we're over at the smallest park. Obviously, it's not done yet, but we see what we're working with here, where Leslie is going out of her way to get the citizens angry so that they'll have to do an environmental impact study. So there's a really funny joke about that coming up in a second, but she actually made a flyer that has a list of the park's planned activities, which include fireworks every night at midnight. She even calls it a conspiracy to get everyone more riled up. So yeah, she's there. She's just like cooking burgers. And, you know, a couple of citizens come over. It's like, hey, what the hell's going on here? It says that, and they're just like, you know, and then that's when Mel, the red-faced man, actually starts like raising his voice. And Leslie's just like, yeah, I hear you guys. Come on. So it's like, she's clearly trying to sabotage this, but I think even like the citizens would be like, what the hell's going on? Like, why is Leslie like doing this? You know, it doesn't make any sense. So back over to Tom and Jerry. Tom is finally shot down by Jerry, who says, let's just do what Chris asked. Isn't dreaming big what killed your last company? And it's so, like, I mean, again, you guys know how I feel about Tom. I'm not trying to be like, yeah, at every stop we need to, like, shoot Tom down. But the way he, like, you know, he started off the show, he's just like, no, Jerry's not my number two, he's my number three. And spoiler, moving ahead, I think he calls him his number four. But actually, he does call him his number four. So, you know, fuck Tom. But I love that he's just like, no, we got to do this. And Jerry's finally like, no, you know what? Let's do what Chris asked. And that's when Tom's like, well, come on, man. You know, I'm all about dreaming big and everything. And Jerry just says, isn't dreaming big what shut down your last company? He doesn't say it like an asshole, but I'm just saying it the way I wish Jerry would have. And he says it nice, but he makes a good point to Tom. He's like, dude, let's just stick to, like, we don't need to overdo this. We can't really, we don't have the resources right now, even though apparently they do. But it's like, let's just stick to the budget. And then, you know, like, Tom, he just, he looks like a little kid whose, like, ball was taken away from him. He's just like, But it's also, like, a good kind of knocking down Tom a peg. Like, it's a good scene that actually, like, gets him back to, like, all right, dude, let's bring this guy back down to earth. But the way I see it, it's just Jerry being like, Tom, you're a fucking loser. So that's how I see it. All right, back over to the park. Chris and Ben arrive as they are now roughly, or sorry, there are now roughly 10 to 15 people picketing the park with signs like, God hates small parks. And even, this is the one I talked about before, because Leslie's like, guys, I don't know what's going on. I mean, they're demanding an environmental impact report. And she's like, see? And it shows a guy walking with the sign that just says, I demand an environmental impact report. So I don't think I mentioned it before, but I think Leslie actually had poster boards with markers ready for these people. So it's just like, you can't be, like, any more, like, that's how dumb these people are, though. They don't realize that it's like Leslie's just, you know, anyone would have just kind of looked into this like, what the hell's going on? But maybe one of them called Chris and Ben. Maybe that's why they came down. However, well, obviously someone called them because there's people picketing. All right. So, but then Ben steps in again, telling everyone, everything that you're upset about is all canceled. It's just going to be a quiet patch of grass hurting no one. So he tells them, like, no fireworks, none of this bullshit, none of that. And he's just, Ben just comes in hot here, just kind of like fucking annoyed, pissed off. So all the people start walking away. And then Ben just kind of lays everything out for Chris, telling him that he and Leslie aren't this dream team that Chris keeps calling them. And that saying that Leslie steamrolls every idea he has. As he's telling Chris this, he's wrapping red tape around the park. So, yeah, he's just, like, literally just kind of wrapping it around there. And then he cuts it with his own scissors, and he does, like, this sarcastic celebration about the grand opening. He's like, hey, yay, great, the park's open. And then him and Chris just walk away. It's definitely, like, one of Ben's colder interactions. You know, I mean, like, it's just, it's good because I like sarcasm, and it's a good one on Ben's part. He's just kind of like, hey, here's your park, Leslie. Look at that. Here we go. We did that. There's the red tape, and we cut it, and it's open. And he's basically just like, I don't care anymore. I'm out of here. So, yeah, it's, you feel bad for Leslie, but it's also just kind of like, eh, good for you, Ben. You know. All right, so over to the Pawnee Community College. There's a problem. Intro to Women's Studies costs $960. Of course, April and Andy don't have that money, but Andy's just like, you know what? I'm going to beg for money in the street like a homeless person. And of course, April's like, no, you're not. And she actually says, I'll just have my parents pay for it because they pay for her classes. And I guarantee you, April's parents would 100% pay for Andy's classes. But, you know, Andy's like, no, he's like, that's embarrassing, you know? So he's got some pride and he's like, no, I'm going to go beg for it in the street like a homeless person. All right. Over to Leslie's office. Even Anne is getting annoyed with her.
Oh, my God. Everything in my life is going wrong right now. Whose fault is this? I demand to know.
Actually,
Ben thinks that I'm a steamroller. That's unbelievable. How dare he think that I'm a steamroller?
Leslie, I'm just telling you.
I know. He's going through a phase right now, and eventually we're going to both be friends again.
No, what I was going to say is that you really are
working too hard. I know, Anne. You keep starting all these sentences and not finishing.
You're a steamroller. You are a massive, enormous, runaway steamroller with no brakes and a cement brick on the gas pedal. You made me watch all 8 Harry Potter movies. I don't even like Harry Potter.
That's insane. You love Harry Potter. You've seen all 8 movies.
Such an amazing line. And I love that it's one of numerous Harry Potter references in the show. My favorite one probably being the one where Leslie's on the phone with the credit card company. And they're just like, oh, she's enrolled in like the Harry Potter class. And she's like, oh, I specialize in potions. Talking to Tom. It's great. All right. So anyway, Anne then tells Leslie that she does only what she wants and she hears only what she hears. Basically just saying, it's like, yeah, it, like, people's mouths are moving most of the time, but if you don't care about what they're saying, you're not hearing it. So it's probably, you know, like when Snoopy, you know, like, what he hears. Leslie finally admits that Anne is right, and then she's going to have to let Ben go. So it's kind of sad. Back over to Tom, Jerry, and Donna. Tom gets an idea when Jerry shows him his original Parks Department ID, which is a super retro one. And this is because they're sitting down having lunch, and Jerry's just like, Tom, you know what? He's like, I've realized in my years of working here that what you got to do is just the same exact thing every day, all day. And he pulls out his old ID, and he's just like, he's like, check out my old ID here. And that's when Jerry gets the idea, because it's like super retro and it looks really cool. Actually, it's got like it looks like it's from the 70s. So the Parks and Recreation logo looks very like disco-y, and like the colors are like bright, like red, orange, you know, like it looks like fire, like disco. However, we have a huge Easter egg here that admittedly I didn't see this the first time. Like, I've known since, and you know, but like the first time I saw this, I didn't catch it, and I think a lot of people don't catch it. So real quick, actually, I'm gonna jump ahead to next week's episode, The Trial of Leslie Knope. There's a scene in there where we find out that Jerry's name is actually Gary. If you've been listening to this podcast, that's not a spoiler for you. However, up until now, we have known him as Jerry. There's one part in season two where we find out that Jerry went to an all-boys school and he was Tinkerbell, and his mom used to call him Gerald. Okay. So when you hear that, it's just like, okay, Gerald. Jerry is short for Gerald. Whatever. No big deal. Next week, yeah, Leslie is reading because she's being deposed, and she's like, Gary Gergich. And she's like, oh my God, Gary. And I really should just get to this next week, but just, I guess, to explain this part here, this Easter egg. She's like, oh my God, Jerry, you can't even get your name right. And that's when he tells her, no, my name actually is Gary. And there's, so it's a big reveal to us. However, it doesn't stick even then. It's just kind of a throwaway joke. Like, the joke even comes in the cold open. So there's probably people who watched this episode for the first time and maybe didn't even see it because it came after the end. Okay, back to the episode we're talking about now. Right here, when Jerry shows Tom his ID, and I'm going to post this on Instagram, so if you want to see it there. His ID clearly says Gary Gergich, G-A-R-R-Y. So that's the first reveal right there that his name is not Jerry, it's Gary. However, I feel that if anyone caught that, they could have gone back to that episode, the one where we find out that he went to the all-boys school and his mom called him Gerald. Maybe people see the G in Gary and they're like, okay, so maybe that's where Gerald came from. It was a G, but Gerald for short sounds more like Jerry. So, but again, this is the actual proof to show us right away. It's just like, okay, his name's not Jerry, but then we find out more officially, I think, next week. So it's pretty awesome, and it's a very overlooked moment, and it's brilliant by this writing staff. Way to go, Parks writers. All right, so I haven't said this in a while, and I got to admit, it's kind of nice to say. We go over to the shoeshine stand where April and Andy are trying to raise money for Andy's course, obviously. He even says that he's back at the shoeshine stand as a second job. So I like that they didn't just put him there and it's like, wait, I thought he didn't work there anymore. He tells Ron, because Ron comes walking around the corner. It's like, what the hell are you guys doing? April's trying to sell Mouse Rat CDs for like $50, you know, just ridiculous stuff. Kyle, of course, is sitting in the chair. I love that the one day that Andy gets right back to work, Kyle comes running over and it's like, yeah, probably because he's like, hell, Andy got great at that, but he was gone, so I haven't had a good shoe shine in weeks. But then you find out, like, because Kyle's even like sarcastically kind of responding to April trying to charge $50 for CDs. And she's like, eh, shut up, Kyle. I already took the money out of your wallet, and then hands it back to him. He's just like, oh. All right, but then Ron finds out what the hell's actually going on, and he gives Andy some great news. He's won a Ron Swanson scholarship. Of course, Andy has no idea what that means, and then April just slows it down. And she's like, no, a Ron Swanson scholarship. And he's just like, oh, shit. Like, so he gets it, gives Ron a big hug, and of course, Ron's like, let go of me or you forfeit the money. So Andy lets go. But awesome thing, and it just kind of shows you how much money Ron has. Like, $960. I mean, anyone who, like, saves their money. I mean, like that, it could be argued, I guess, depending on what your status is in this world, that it's like $1,000 isn't that much. But to a lot of people, to me, $1,000 is a lot of money. So just for Ron to be able to be like, yeah. And then he tells us that he does have gold buried around Pawnee. And we've already known that. But, you know, whenever Ron talks about his wealth, it just kind of reminds me of Dwight Schrute, who doesn't talk about his wealth a lot until you find out, like, later on more about the beet farm. Like at the end of the series, we find actually see the beet farm and find out how big it is and how much it's worth. So like those similarities there. Over to Ben's office, Anne has come to ask Ben to speak with Leslie. He is against it at first, but then she convinces him, saying, "Ben, please, I don't have unlimited texting, and when she doesn't text you, she texts me," and she just starts like with her finger, like scrolling through her phone, like just letting it just, and you can see there's probably like 100 messages from Leslie. All right. So now we cut back over to Tom and Jerry, and we see the logo that Tom came up with. And it's literally the same one that Jerry just showed him on the ID. So it's a very retro 70s font, like I talked about, but Chris absolutely loves it. And it's a cool, like, and this is why Tom is such a good businessman, because he's got like a display, and I'll get to this display in a second, but it's a really well done display with all these different, like there's like shirts, hats, keychains, like that. So that, actually, I'll just get to it right now. That's what I'm saying. Like these materials you see, it's like, where did this stuff come from? This is the same day, and Tom has hats, like trucker hats. He had at least three made, because Tom, Don, and Jerry are all making them. T-shirts, keychains, lanyards, all this stuff. It looks great, and it's an awesome scene, but it makes zero sense, because this is the same day. It drives me nuts. But anyway, Chris loves it, saying this is literally the greatest idea ever. And then, we do see a rare scene where Tom actually gives Jerry credit. But like I said before, this is where he bumps him down to his number 4 instead of his number 3. But Jerry doesn't like take offense to that. He's actually just excited that Tom gave him credit. So, folks, we've gotten here. My favorite scene in the entire series. We are at the smallest park, which is completed now. And this is another thing I'm so confused about, because this is like the same day. Again, it's like Leslie called Ben. Hey, can you meet me at the park? We saw this park. Even if it's the next day, it was in rubbles and now it looks beautiful. I mean, granted, this thing is like 10 by 10. I'm not joking. Look at the thumbnail for this episode and you'll see. Like you can see the entire little park in the thing. So, but this happened in like hours. But either way, I guess that's like the Parks and Rec magic. You know, it's like Tom always having whatever he needs. It's going to look great, so let's just have it. All right. But I do have to point out that I feel like the second Leslie and Ben leave this park, like any of the Greg Pakaitis types in Pawnee are just going to fucking destroy this park. Like there's like a nice little like, you know, concrete fountain in there and stuff. It'll be destroyed. Everything will be destroyed. This park will be vandalized and ruined in a matter of hours, I'm guessing. But anyway, Ben agrees to meet Leslie after he grew a little concerned when she only left him one voicemail instead of the usual 20. So Leslie, and this is still kind of Leslie's character, like, she admits to Ben that she was selfish with the whole breakup and she never really considered his feelings, but she doesn't apologize. She still doesn't say like, "I'm sorry," or "I apologize for how everything went." She just kind of tells him how she acted. And it's like, it's nice of her to do, like to kind of point that out, like, "Hey, I was wrong." But it's just kind of weird that she still doesn't apologize. Doesn't say, "I'm sorry." The two of them, they just, and it's sad because like they kind of know that there's really not much that they can do about this whole thing. However,
there is another option. We could just say screw it and do this thing for real.
What?
I miss you like crazy. I think about you all the time. I want to be with you. So let's just say screw it.
We would have to tell Chris.
Yeah.
It could turn into a scandal. Yeah. It could hurt your campaign. I mean,
yes.
How would you imagine we do this?
I don't know. But I know how I feel, and I want to be with you. But I'm done steamrolling people. This is how I feel. How do you feel?
And then Ben just goes in for the kiss. It's amazing. I mean, it's just like such a great scene. I mean, like, you really feel it. You really feel it. The acting is incredible. The situation is similar, actually, to last week from the treaty with Ben and Leslie, because they're at odds again in this episode. However, this time, both of them are just saying, like, fuck it. Like, I'm done not being with this person. I'm done being single. So I love that. Yeah, I mean, like, just if you kind of go back and watch last week's episode, it's similar. And I talked about it in that episode when Leslie kind of, like, they're resigned to the fate. And there is a scene where Ben actually makes a face to Leslie, kind of like, oh God, I didn't think you were going to give up. So here, I love that. It's just like, nope, not this time, dude. And like, I've always been a sucker for these kind of scenes. And like, when the will they, won't they couples finally get together, you know, like, you see it with April and Andy, and that's what I love about this show. It's like, there's no more bullshit from here on out with Leslie and April, or Leslie and April. Whoa, that would be a completely different one. With Leslie and Ben, similar to April and Andy, where you're just like, you don't have to worry. And I always bring up, like, Jim and Pam, they never break up. So I should stop using that one, because they're an awesome couple too. It's just, you know, I've talked about my feelings with The Office, and they're similar to many people, how it's just kind of like, what the hell are you doing here? Like, just kind of freaking people out at the end there. But with Leslie and Ben, I mean, like, there's definitely some conflict of interest type stuff moving forward with these two, because they both become very important and kind of like powerful Pawnee officials, not even just Pawnee, but like Indiana, you know? So it's awesome. But I mean, like, there's never any threat though to like their love or their relationship, except in season 5, like kind of in the beginning, there's a little bit, like, they're suggesting that it's like, oh my God, like, well, we're not suggesting they're going to break up or anything. But when Ben starts working for Jen Barkley, who we haven't met yet on this podcast, at least for this run through, she's had her own episode way back, actually, when I was still doing the character breakdowns. But if you're just, you know, obviously, if you're literally just watching this show right now, I can't imagine any of you are watching it for the first time with me right now. But anyway, Jen Barkley, who's an awesome character, he'll go on to work for her. And yeah, there's never any like scandalous stuff there. It's just he has to be away from Leslie. But however, they kind of get that kind of. What am I looking for? They take care of that quickly so that there's no worry for us, the fans. Okay, wow. And then we get to the tag of the episode. This is a good one, as we see Ron dropping Andy off for his first day of school. We find out that, and this is kind of interesting, actually, we find out that against his father's wishes, Ron secretly enrolled in college while he was thought to be working at a steel mill. So yeah, he tells us that when he was 14 or 15, his dad would drop him off every day at the steel mill because he said he didn't need an education. So just like, obviously values work over education. Ron, who's obviously, we know that he's very skilled at pretty much everything he does, probably had enough experience working at the steel mill and was just like, you know what? It's not going to hurt anything if I cut away and take some classes. And he doesn't tell us much. He just says that he did learn a lot. So that's kind of where you can see earlier in the episode why he wanted Andy to actually do something good with this class instead of just picking bullshit ones. All right. And then we get like a hilarious scene with Andy answering a question in his class and just being so completely wrong, like sexist also, but like in a clueless, like well-intended way. So it's very funny because he's like, you know, we're going to teach women how to drive better. And we're going to, and the professor and like all the women, they only show a couple of them. There's like a couple sitting behind him, just like their faces kind of like, what the fuck? And then when he's done, the teacher's like, that is completely wrong, and he knows it too. He's just like, he doesn't even let her go further. He's like, yep, I knew it, I'm gonna work on that, I'm new to the class, da, da, da. And it was just funny because it really reminds me of Billy Madison at the end when they're having like the academic bowl, and he does the whole the very popular scene when Billy Madison gives this long-winded answer and the judge is just like, at, you know, he's like, everything you just said is wrong. He's like, everyone in the room is now stupider having heard it. Nothing in your incoherent rambling was anything close to what could be considered a rational answer. If you've never seen Billy Madison, watch that scene. Just Google like end of movie Billy's speech. And then like the way that the teacher or the guy who's like the judge responds, it's classic. But yeah, that kind of reminds me of the way that Andy's professor responds to his answer. So, all right. So on IMDb, this is sitting at a 7.9. My final thoughts. This is one of my favorite episodes. And I feel like for a long time I've been saying, oh, Smallest Park is my favorite episode. Watching it enough times, this, for obviously for the reason that I talked about, my favorite scene in the entire series, which is Ben and Leslie when they finally kiss. Nothing better than that. So that earns it, I think, in my top, I'd say at least like 5 to 7, because there are definitely episodes that are a lot funnier than this. And me personally, I love the stories about the show, but I love the comedy. If you get me laughing, like that's what, like a random ass episode, like the possum is so funny. And like telethon episodes like that, that don't really have any meaning or like anything beyond what they are. Just like they're like bottle episode. No, they're not bottle episodes. That's actually a very specific kind of episode, but they're just like self-contained episodes, let's say. So this one, I don't think it's that funny, but it does have some like interesting fun stuff going on. The April on, wow, I am having such a hard time with names this episode. The April, Ron, and Andy trio is awesome. It's always good because it's like Ron is their dad. And granted, I know these two are married, but it's all to anyone else, like on the outside world, if you're not seeing Andy and April like kissing or whatever, it would look like a dad and his two kids because they're both so immature and Ron's just like, so those kind of pairings are always great. I love Jerry standing up to Tom. Again, it wasn't intended to be anything beyond Jerry just kind of like, hey man, but I love that it is Jerry basically telling Tom like, nope, we're not doing it your way because that way fucking sucks and you failed. I love that scene with Anne getting Leslie to realize that she is a steamroller. And then like, it's even a phrase that Ben uses earlier or later in the episode when he's cutting the red tape, he talks about how she steamrolls. So it's funny that Anne and Ben both use steamroll in different, situations in the episode. The Gary pre-reveal is incredible. Seeing the proof right there on his ID that it's like, wow, he actually is named Gary Gergich. And then the cold open is hilarious. The one, like I said, with just everyone laughing at Jerry. It's sad and you feel bad for him. But at this point, it happens so often. You just kind of got to laugh with everyone. But that is going to wrap up this episode. If you'd like to contact the show, citizensofpawnee@gmail.com is how you can do that. Please like and follow on Instagram at Citizens of Pawnee Podcast and at Parks Rec Memes. Next week, I'll be covering Season 4, Episode 9, The Trial of Leslie Knope. Thank you for listening to Citizens of Pawnee, a Parks and Recreation podcast. My name's Brian, and I'll see you next week. Shauna's memoir that was based on her blog is called Tweeping Up Appearances, which is about, quote, her journey to find happiness by smiling through the pain.